All my trust is in you. That's hard. That's a hard thing to say. All of it? Man, I mean, as I was just singing that, I was feeling personally challenged on, I don't know if that's true of me. And we're especially going to deal with that reality, I think, as we get into this sermon series we're calling Jesus for President. We're going to talk a lot about election season, politics season, and I think maybe for many of us, that's just at the outset, I think maybe we need to admit that politics is a really hard thing to understand, right? Like, politics is a really hard thing to understand. When I was in college, I was a history major and a political science minor. Which is not really impressive. It's like one of the smallest majors and minors that you can have. I actually had to find more classes to take my senior year in order to have enough to graduate. So my senior year was full of like weight training and guitar one. But I took classes on political parties and interest groups. And I got to tell you, I'm not sure if I could explain it to you today. Politics is a really hard thing. And so, like Justin mentioned, we got our fourth and fifth graders in here. They're joining us for worship every now and then just to see how this goes. I felt like for their sake, certainly not for your sake, because the rest of you all understand politics. I get that, right? But for their sake, let me try to explain a little bit about political systems around the world using the famous analogy of having two cows, right? So let's start with our first one. Our first one is socialism. And the way you understand socialism is you have two cows and you give one to your neighbor. And that's how socialism works, okay? Next one. Communism is you have two cows, and the state, the government, takes both and then gives you some milk. That's how communism works. Fascism is a little bit differently. You have two cows, the state takes both and then sells you the milk, right? A little less desirable if you're asking me, right? And then you got capitalism. You have two cows, you sell one, and then you buy a bull, and your herd multiplies, the economy grows, you sell them and retire on the income. That's capitalism. Looks pretty impressive for the rest of us. Now, if your nation is run by bureaucrats, right, who manage all of the details, you have two cows, the state takes both, shoots one, milks the other, and then throws the milk away, is how that works. And many of us feel like we're in this place of surrealism now if we look at our political system where you actually have two giraffes and the government requires you to take harmonica lessons. Like, that maybe for me is the closest that our political system actually feels to making sense today. So it's confusing. I get it, right? So now you're all well prepared to vote on November 6th, right? Like, it's going to totally make sense here, right? But unfortunately, that is not going to be the thing that prepares us. Like, just understanding how the system works probably isn't going to prepare us for really participating in the system. Because right now, we're living like in the very heart of the most political seasons of our lives. Like, we're living in the middle of that. And one of the things that we can all tend to recognize is this whole thing feels like a mess. This whole thing feels broken, right? We can agree that this just doesn't seem like it's working right. And maybe it hasn't felt that way for many of us for a really, really long time. But in election season, it seems pretty clear that at the end of the day, one of the things that is true is that we all want a leader. We all want a leader. We all want someone who can fix it. We all want someone who can set things right. We want someone who we can follow, who can take this mess we're in and make it better. But the problem we're experiencing is that it doesn't seem like there are leaders worthy of our choosing. In many ways, we struggle with finding this leader that we all want. Because leaders today don't lead like leaders did before, right? All leaders care about today in the political system is money or getting special favors or the ways they make wrong appear to be right. We struggle with politics and political leaders. But we all want a leader to make things right for us. We're having a hard time finding that person, probably because I think the way in which political systems tend to work is at some point it stops being about what's going to make things right, and it starts becoming about what's going to make things the way I want. So we sort of trade out this desire for what's right in the world for this desire for what we want. And we all want. We want things for ourselves. We want things for our country. We want things for our children, for the nation to come after us. But as probably any parent has screamed at a child at some point in their life, what you want is very different from what you need, right? And so that's the spot where we find. In fact, I was working with a team of people recently about launching a new resource for young adult ministry, for 20-year-olds and doing ministry that churches can interact with young adults and millennials. And I found out by working with a marketing expert is that I can pay my marketing expert money, and he can tell me what Google says, what people search for about young adult ministry. So I can find out that young adult ministry is most searched in January. I don't know why. And it can tell me the exact words that people use when they're searching around that. So politics are the same way, that campaigns shell out tons and tons of money to see what we're all searching for. Maybe not like you, like in particular, although you could talk to the NSA and they probably can find that out too. But like as a whole, political campaigns know what we search for and when we search for them. So basically what they can do is take the information and go, that's what the people want. So let's tell them what they want. Let's speak to them in ways that they want. So really political campaigns become this self-centered cycle around dealing with wants. And so today we're actually going to start this new sermon series for the next 5 weeks called Jesus for President. And we want to focus on what does it mean for us to live in a political season, in a political world, and who we are as people in the midst of that. And to be honest, I'm not going to drive you towards even necessarily which way to vote. My point of this series isn't to teach us how to vote. My point in this series is to teach us how to live as people. And that will probably influence the ways you vote. And so you may be coming here going, I wonder which way are we going to lean. You might actually be surprised with the way I might personally vote. But I'm not even going to talk about that. That's not what we're doing here. What we want to do is to talk about what does God say about our world and about us as people? And how does that challenge and influence how we think about politics and leaders and Jesus and ourselves? Those are the things we want to get at in this series. We have a lot of anxiety around this issue. Right, some of you have even come like up to me and like, I have anxiety for you to talk about this in front of a group of people. Our world is just full of a lot of this anxiety around this issue. We've got conflict on everything, right? Some people want rich people taxed, some people don't. Some people want gun ownership regulated, some people don't. Some people want marriage to be defined a certain way, and some people don't. Some people want a leader who we can follow and trust and who says everything right. And some people want someone who's going to tell it like it is. We disagree. We have conflict. We have anxiety around that. We get that. But the one thing that we share is that we all want a leader. And so today as we begin this first conversation, we're not even going to spend a lot of time pointing to Jesus yet, because I want to deal first with what God says about us and this desire we have for a leader. And then we're going to see how that plays out over the next 4 weeks after this. But to do that, we're going to start way back in the Old Testament. We're going to look at 1 Samuel 8. And 1 Samuel is the sixth book in the Bible. It comes really early on, and it's one of six books, 1 and 2 Samuel, 1 and 2 Kings, and 1 and 2 Chronicles, that really deal with God's people becoming a nation. Right? So it seems really a great idea to look at that today as we think about ourselves as a nation. God's people spent 400 years as captives in Israel, as slaves. They were not a nation. They were enslaved by Egypt. And then they came out and moved into the promised land, into this great exodus. They spent 40 years in the desert coming to this promised land. A whole new generation of people grew up in that time. And now they arrive into Canaan, into the promised land, and they have to decide, what does it mean for us to be a people? And so all these books talk about how the Israelites become a nation under kings and under leaders. And chapter 8 is very pivotal in that experience. And so we're going to start there. And so this is how it starts. When Samuel grew old, he appointed his sons as Israel's leaders. The names of his firstborn were Joel, and the name of his second was Abijah. And they served at Beersheba. But his sons did not follow his ways. They turned aside after dishonest gain and accepted bribes and perverted justice. So all the elders of Israel gathered together and came to Samuel at Ramah and said to him, "You are old," which is kind of a rude thing to say. "Hey, Samuel, you're old, and your sons do not follow your ways. Now appoint a king to lead us, such as all the other nations have." So a couple of interesting things about this moment in history with Samuel and the people, right? Samuel is what's known in the Old Testament as a judge. And it wasn't a judge that sat on a bench and had a gavel and appointed laws. Judges were de facto leaders of all of the tribes of Israel. So as they were coming to this point of asking this question, the nation was going through a cycle. And these people groups, this extended huge family of the 12 tribes of Israel, were going through this cycle where they would fall away from following God's laws. They would turn under their own desires. They would worship idols. They would do all of these things. And God would then punish them. And then as a result of that punishment, usually by other nations coming in and warring with them, they would cry out to God to save us. And God would send them a person who they would rise up from the ranks of one of their tribes to lead them, and they were called judges. And the judge's job was to draw them back to God as prophets and point them towards what the law says, what God says, and help them to live again underneath God in the way that he calls them to. So they are almost like these tribal chieftains of this developing nation. Samuel was the last of these judges. He was the very last one, and you can go through the stories and hear this cycle again and again and again. And so as Samuel is transitioning, he appoints his two children. He appoints his sons. And these candidates for leaders sound a little familiar to us, right? Samuel's sons didn't lead like he did, didn't lead like we had led in the past. His sons were only interested in money and taking bribes. His son has accepted money for special favors. His sons made what was wrong appear to be right. Sounds a little familiar, right, in our world with our leaders. And so all the elders came around him and said, this has got to stop, right? We want a new leader. In fact, let's every 4 or 8 years, let's get a new person in there and see what we can do. Right? That sounds like us. We get that. We all want a leader, and we go through these same cycles. There's a clear theme that inside of us is something that longs, that desires, that reaches out for someone to lead us. And it's been in us for a really, really long time. We see it way back here as the Israelites had said, now appoint a king to lead us, such as all the other nations have. So we have this thing inside of us now, and it's been a part of us for a really, really long time. Even the Israelites, there's a longing inside of us, this desire for something in this to reach out and to have someone fix it. I know I can see this all over in my life. I see it in my kids' lives. Like my kids have this, my kids get this, right? And my kids, their favorite toy right now is like Nerf guns. I don't know if you have a neighborhood where you're just mowing over Nerf darts all the time, but that's my neighborhood. Because my kids go out into the neighborhood and get their band of kids around, and they're all carrying like the most insane Nerf guns I've ever seen in my life. And what do? They spend most of their time arguing about who's going to lead what team, right? And usually it's the oldest kid or the kid with the biggest Nerf gun. Right? So they run around, you know, doing missions to stop the bad guys, but they have to decide who's going to lead us. Right? We have this, even as kids, we need a leader, right? You look at even TV shows, they all play on this. New TV shows like The Designated Survivor of who's going to be the leader. Even the original Survivor is all played off on that. I get it. I get this inside of me because, yeah, if the world ends, I'm going to be looking for a leader. If this world goes to zombie apocalypse time, I'm not qualified to lead. I'm looking for an alpha male around me with some sort of rudimentary sense of tribalism who can lead me and my friends like through the post-apocalyptic landscape and survive. Right? We get this. We all get this. There's something inside of us that desires a leader. And so our first step in understanding where do we go from here is we got to get in touch with that. We got to get in touch with that want on the inside. The Israelites came to God that way and said, we want a king to lead us like the other nations have. The Israelites came to God that way, and so do we. And we got to get in touch with that. So let's continue the story. Samuel then goes to God, and he's not happy. He is not happy about what these people, the elders, have said to him. And God has some really interesting things to say. But when they said, give us a king to lead us, this displeased Samuel. So he prayed to the Lord, and the Lord told him, listen to all the people are saying to you. It's not you they have rejected, but they have rejected me as their king. And as they have done from the day I brought them up out of Egypt until this day, forsaking me and serving other gods, so they are doing to you. Samuel, it's not you. that they're rejecting, he's saying. Which I get why Samuel would take this personally as the leader of this nation, and his successors are, you know, getting pushed to the side. God's, I love how the New International Revised Version says this: "You are not the one they have turned their backs on. I am the one they do not want as their king. They are doing just as they always have done. They have deserted me and served other gods. They have done that from the time I brought them up out of Egypt until this day." It's not you, it's me. It's like this gets really personal for God in this moment. God's not just like putting out a law here or anything. He's reflecting something he's experiencing personally. So there's some context here around how they got here and what they're doing here, this pattern that they've had. Back in Deuteronomy, they've started experiencing that as they're about to cross in the promised land, into the promised land and to take hold of Canaan. In Deuteronomy 9 through 11, Moses, who's leading them at this time, actually reminds them of their pattern. He recounts how when they got to the mountain and they received the Ten Commandments in Exodus, that they turned away from God and actually chose a golden calf. And they say to him, "The Lord, or you also made the Lord angry at Taberah and Massa and at Kibroth Hattaava." He's like naming all of these places, like, "You've done this before. You made God mad here and here and here because you did these things again and again. You chose idols. You walked away from God again and again and again." And then in verse 24, he says, "You have been rebellious against the Lord ever since I have known you." Ever since I have known you, this has been your pattern. And again, the Revised International Version says, "You have been refusing to obey the Lord as long as I've known you." And in chapters 10 and 11, you see God pleading. He's saying, "Put me first. Love me with all your heart. Follow all my ways." Chapter after chapter, it's God sort of giving his platform to them. Choose me as your leader, or his policies and ways of living. And then after Moses kind of goes through this all with them, we read this in Deuteronomy 26. "The Lord your God commands you this day to follow these decrees and laws. Carefully observe them with all your heart and with all your soul. You have declared this day that the Lord is your God and that you will walk in obedience to him, that you will keep his decrees, his commands and laws, and that you will listen to him. And the Lord has declared on this day that you are his people, his treasured possession, as he promised, and that you are to keep all his commands. He has declared that he will set you in praise, in fame, and honor, high above all the nations he has made, and that you will be a people holy to the Lord your God, as he promised." So the people of Israel have this history. They have this story again and again and again of how they follow God, and then they look for a leader somewhere else. And then it goes poorly for them, and they come back, and they repent and they follow God and they look for a leader for somewhere else. And we get that because we all want a leader. But this temptation, this pattern of looking to someone else who God, other than God, to lead us and to love us, doesn't seem to fill it for us. You see, we all want a leader, but what for the thing we really long for is what God just says. We long to find ourselves as someone's treasured possession. God says, "You will be my treasured possession above everyone else. Like, I will place you in a holy place. I will have this connection to you." So the longing we have, we want a leader, but the longing we have is for this identity as a treasured possession. So God says to Samuel, "I get it. I get it, Samuel. I get why they're asking for a king. It's not new to me. They keep turning away from me and they want another leader." And he says, "So give them one." Here's how he says it in the story in verse 8. He says, "They are doing just as they have always done. They have deserted me and served other gods. They have done that from the time I brought them up out of Egypt until this day." You see, we all want a leader. And we all turn away from God to find someone to lead us. But what we long for is this other identity. What we settle for is lower taxes. Right, we long for this connection, this value, this identity as a treasured possession, but we settle for social policies that seem correct. financial regulations that seem right to us. And every 4 years or so, someone comes along and offers us a shortcut to that identity, right? They offer us this other way. If you just trust me, if you just give your loyalty to me, then I'll keep you safe, or I'll lower your taxes, or I'll give you power, or I'll promise the economy will work better. And we think that the way to get that longing of that feeling of connection, of as identity as a treasured possession, will come through this shortcut. And some of us are looking around in our political landscape today and say, it's never been as crazy as it is today, as it has been this week, right? Some of us are looking around and say, it's never been this broken. It's never been this confusing. And I think you're wrong. I think it's always been this confusing. I think it's always been this broken. It's always been this same story, again and again and again. Because we go off in this other direction. In fact, there's been some research that has, someone did an interesting study, and the study was about human beings walking in straight lines. I guess if you're a researcher, you can kind of get a lot of things, grant for a lot of things if you want. So what they did is they would put human beings like out in a desert where there's no landmarks whatsoever and just get them to walk in a straight line. And by and large, they would do okay. But if the longer you left humans walking on their own without any markers, the more they walked in a circle. And in fact, if you blindfolded them, their circles would get tighter. They would walk in a circle quicker. They would even put you out in forests and do the same thing. And what their research showed is that without guideposts, without landmarks to sight from, human beings will just continue to walk in circles. And that's true. So the more and more we look in a direction for ourselves to lead us, the more and more we find ourselves in the same place. So the question we have to ask is, if we have this God-shaped longing to be connected to Him, to be His treasured possession, where do we find ourselves walking in circles? Where do we find ourselves putting hope and trust in someone else to lead us? We end up in cycles of doing the same thing again and again, and it just takes us off the rails. So let's go back to 1 Samuel 8, verse 9. God says, so now listen to them. They ask for you to give him a king, so listen to them. Just give him a king, but warn them solemnly and let them know what the king who will reign over them will claim as his rights. So God says, let them have what they want. They want this thing, let them have it. But give them a strong warning. Let them know that the king that they're going to put over them is going to expect something out of them. The way this king is going to lead is going to expect something out of them. And I kind of love this because this is true of God's nature throughout the whole thing. The God of the Bible is not a God who forces himself on us. The God of the Bible is one who allows us to make choices. He simply doesn't control us. He invites us into something else. And if we want to walk away, he warns us but lets us. So Samuel goes on to describe that if they put their hope in this king that doesn't care for them like God does, they're actually going to become slaves. Here's how he says it. Samuel told all the words of the Lord to the people who were asking him for a king. He said, this is what the king who will reign over you will claim as his rights. He will take your sons and make them serve with his chariots and horses. And they will run in front of his chariots. Some he will sign to be commanders of thousands and commanders of fifties. Others to plow his ground and reap his harvest, and still others to make weapons of war and equipment for his chariots. He will take your daughters to be perfumers and cooks and bakers. He will take the best of your fields and vineyards and olive groves and give them to his attendants. He will take a tenth of your grain and of your vintage and will give it to his officials and his attendants. Your male and female servants and the best of your cattle and donkeys he will take for his own use. He will take a tenth of your flocks, and you yourselves will become slaves. So he rehearses all of the bad things that will happen to them. And then he warns them, when that day comes, you will cry out for relief from the king you have chosen. But the Lord will not answer you in that day. So he ends and says, listen, all this bad stuff's going to happen. And God's going to say, he told you so. Right? God's going to say, this is what I warned you for. So here's how this process is going to work, right? We all want this king to lead us out of this mess we're in. We all want this leader. That's pretty normal. And God says, when you have this king, it's going to take you to places you don't want to go. God says that he'll be our king. He invites us to that end. And we decide that someone else is going to get us what we want in a shortcut, what we want faster. And Samuel, speaking for God, warns them. And Samuel says, God's not going to be there for you. So this is how the particular story ends. In spite of what Samuel said, the people refused to listen to him. No, they said, we want a king to lead us. He'll get out at the head of our armies and fight our battles. Samuel heard everything the people had said. He told the Lord about it. The Lord answered, listen to them, give them a king. Okay, if that's what you want, you can go back to your oppressor. Remember, he's talking to a group of people who have a generation of experience in slavery. He says, it's only going to lead you back there, but okay. So here's the thing we have to grapple with, right? We all have wants. We all want a king to lead us. But again and again and again, history tells us that. God himself tells us that. That getting what we want will always leave us wanting. Getting what we want will always leave us wanting for more. And at the end of the day, we learn from Samuel that our wants will always leave us wanting and take us places we don't want to go. We all want a leader. There's something inside of us that wants. Today, I just want to ask us, what if the things we want are going to leave us wanting? Have we actually really considered that? Have we actually really thought through that? No matter how you vote in a month, what kind of hope are you putting in that leader? Could it be that no matter how it shakes out, you're going to be unsatisfied? Could it be that no matter who ends up in what role, you're still going to be longing to be someone's treasured possession? Don't blame me. I voted for the other guy. It doesn't take us very far when we really get in touch with that feeling. Our wants always leave us wanting. And it goes deeper than your vote. It goes way deeper than how you even think politically. Because something inside of you wants. Maybe it's control. Maybe it's power or freedom or love or success. There's something inside of you that wants. But whatever it is that you want, will it leave you wanting? The good news is this is not how the story ends. The story of the Bible is the story of God over and over and over again inviting his people to let him be their king. What Samuel tells these people isn't the end of the story. Samuel says, hey, told you so, God's not going to be there for you. And as we go forward, we find out that that is not the way it plays out. God doesn't leave his people in their own. That's how it begins, but it's not how it ends. That we've got better news about who God is today, that he's here, that he invites us back, that he offers us the same choices, that he wants you to find your way back to him and not to put your hope into earthly heroes or leaders or kings or presidents. And that's the story we're going to focus on in the next coming weeks. What does God do about that want? What does God do about that thing inside of us that drives us to look for the shortcut or look for the other leader? Because he's not going to leave us there. He loves us too much to leave us there. He's going to do something about it. We all want a leader. God gives us a leader if we have eyes to see it and ears to hear it. But today, I think we need to wrestle with that thing inside of us. Today, I think we need to take a look at the thing inside of us that says, give us a king like all the other nations have. God, give me a leader like everybody else seems to have. Give me success like everyone else seems to have. Give me love like everyone else seems to have. Give me the freedom that I so desire and want. We need to wrestle with that inside of us. So today I just want to ask you, can you wrestle with your want and figure out if it's going to leave you wanting? Otherwise, you might find yourself walking in a circle. I also want to invite you over the next 4 weeks as we sort of walk up to the actual election day to do something with me. I want to invite you to act a little differently, even if it's just for yourself, to find ways to focus on Jesus and not to be drawn in to the rhetoric, to the conversation, to the things that make us walk in circles, to not be drawn into the anxiety and the fear where we put false hope in these leadership decisions. So here's a practical way to begin, just really practical. This week, commit to a media fast around politics. For some of you, it might be really hard. For some of you, that means you actually can't open your social media newsfeed for a week because it's all there, right? But commit to fasting from that conversation. And instead, spend the time that you might spend noticing things in a newsfeed or in a newspaper or on political channels on the television. Commit that time to silent listening. Commit that time to silent listening, to prayer, to reading the stories of Jesus himself. As we go through these next few weeks together, those stories are going to become really, really important. So start there. Even if you've never committed time to Jesus before, and I know that there are some of us in this room who would say, I've never done that before. I've never committed any time to praying or reading or thinking on who Jesus is. But do it just this week. Even if you can only do it for one day this week, I don't know what kind of political junkie you might be, but take a fast and say, I'm gonna be outside of the conversation and focus my thoughts and my heart on a different conversation. I'm gonna listen to what's God saying to me? What's God inviting me into? What do the stories of Jesus tell me? And just commit to that. And ask yourself in that process, commit to fasting from this media conversation, instead engaging into a spiritual conversation. And in that conversation, just ask the simple question, what do I want? God, can you show me what it is I want? There's wants in me and they're playing out in all kinds of different ways. What do I want? And what do I want in those who lead me? I think if you spend a week fasting from one conversation and engaging in another and asking those two questions, what do I want and what do I want in someone who leads me? I think God might say something to you that might surprise you. So maybe even this month, commit to giving as much time to the spiritual conversation as you do to the political conversation. Commit to giving as much time to listening and prayer and to the stories of Jesus Christ and into worship than political daily news cycles. And if you're experiencing any anxiety about this thing, which you probably all are to some degree, about who will lead us, what would it mean to place all of our hope in him? To cast those anxieties about Jesus, and instead of turning to earthly leaders to fulfill that hope, we seek answers in a spiritual conversation. So today, I just want to remind us of this. I want to end with this piece from Deuteronomy. I want to remind us what God says. You have declared this day that the Lord is your God and that you will walk in obedience to him, that you will keep his decrees, his commands, and his laws, that you will listen to him. And the Lord has declared this day that you are his people, his treasured possession, as he promised, and that you are to keep all his commands. He has declared that he will set you in praise, in fame, and honor high above all the nations he has made, and that you will be a people holy to the Lord your God, as he promised. Let's pray. God, this is a hard way to start in a hard conversation. Because we got to start with ourselves, God. And I know for me, Lord, that it is hard to place all my hope in you. It is hard to trust you. When the things of this world seem so immediate and so in my face and in my everyday life, God. God, we worry and we confess that. We worry about our country. We worry about our people. We worry about those who are around us, God. We worry that if we make wrong choices, this whole thing's going to fall apart. God, I pray that you would draw us into a new conversation, that you would draw us into a conversation that starts with a trust in you. It starts with a recognition of the things that are inside me that are driving me to something else. God, can you help me see that? Can you help us process through our wants this week? Help us see where our wants are going to leave us wanting. God, we want to trust you. We know that's hard, and we pray that in this season, you would increase our trust in you, and you would draw us evermore back to you. God, let us vote the way we feel we need to vote, but can we trust in you more than anything else? God, thank you for this opportunity to have this conversation to get today. May we continue this conversation in trust and in hope in you. In your son's name we pray, amen.